Mindset to Mike. Can you imagine what your life can be like?
We're talking growth and development, tools, tips, tricks, habits and routines proven by the highest performers in the world of the mind and body. Success starts with the mindset, and you can do it too. Let's go.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Mindset to Mike back again, episode 38. Jimmy on this side.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another mind-growing episode of Mindset to Mike podcast on this fine, fine Monday.
It's a beautiful day, this Monday.
It is, man. You know, I always think about it going into the week after a weekend, and it's just like Monday's here, and it's like, how cool is that you get to like live your life and start fresh.
A fresh start, man. I used to have conflicting perspectives because I believed in like Monday's just another day, right? You should be going hard every day.
Right.
But, and that's good. That's fine. I still believe that way, but it doesn't hurt to have a little a little reset button, even if you are going hard every day. Monday, raise the bar a little bit, So it sounds like those two things are opposites and you can't really believe in both, but I think you can.
Yeah, I agree.
Dude, so today, you guys are listening to this, your boy's headed down to the beach.
Ooh, going to see young Anthony.
Yeah, man, Lucy set me up with a little birthday present going to visit my cousin. We're going to pile Mountain Dews for 3 days, probably stay up late, dude.
Play Nintendo.
Yep, get all weird before baby number two gets here, and I'm really on lockdown taking care of babies.
When's the date?
July 12th, man.
Oh.
Right in the middle of the summer. A little heater baby, that's what I call her, heater baby.
Heater baby.
So, there is some potentially shocking news that – you're about to deliver. I don't know. It might be shocking or it might be lame, but everybody's dying to know, man. What's the update on the butt biome?
The butt biome has arrived. The results are in.
Why don't you throw it back for everybody on what we're even talking about?
So, yeah, it's been like 2 months ago. Part of this fit for service, the first quarter is all health related. So, came with the package was a gut test. So they send this kit in the mail and then you put some doo-doo on it and send it back. And then they analyze your gut as far as, then they have this whole method that they rate your gut on the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best. And then how that translates like to your diet and everything. And they give you recommendations on what you should do to improve it. Because your gut plays a huge role in your overall health and how you feel. It's like the second brain. So it's important that you are aware and get that bad boy in shape as well. So they got the results in. I got to tell you, man.
Let me do a drum roll.
3 out of 10.
Ooh, yeah. You failed.
It's a bit low, it says, man.
Now, what the hell does that mean?
So,
if you're a 3, bro,
I don't know. That's what's so crazy because I didn't really know much about it. What impacts your gut, right? But
I know one thing that impacts your gut. What? All right, lad, that's the last one.
The major factors are genetics, diet, exercise, environmental toxins, and sleeping habits.
Hmm.
So those are the five like most critical components there. So apparently the more diverse your gut is, the better it is. So mine is not as diverse, which makes sense because I eat pretty much, kind of the same things. I just eat a lot of protein and vegetables, and that's really it. I really don't eat much more like diversity and stuff like that. So that was part of the problem.
Are you still doing the keto thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you do like the test strips and everything to find out when you're in ketosis or you just.
Yeah, there's the little strips that you.
Are you in it right now?
I haven't done one this morning. Probably not, because I ate like shit yesterday and drank a lot of beer. But but typically after, once your body adapts, becomes like fat adapted, it's easier to get in ketosis. So like after a 16-hour fast, you know, or you put fats in your coffee and stuff like that, you up your fat intake and just kill the carbs. It'll happen pretty quickly. But sometimes it takes, if you're starting out, it could take, you know, days or even a week or so before your body starts to actually adapt. Everyone's different though. So, and some people can't do the keto, like less than 50 grams, your body, just based on like your genetics and stuff like that, it's just not good for you. So it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
What people find what works the most about going keto, it's mainly because you're doing a form of an elimination diet. You feel better because you're eliminating all the dumb shit that you eat, right? So it's a good starting point. But then once you get to that point where you eliminate eating like junk, like refined carbs and sugars and stuff, and then you naturally feel better. So everyone thinks it's the keto diet specifically, but it's probably more so that you're just eliminating other things. So maybe the ketogenic diet is for you, maybe it's not, but it's a good starting point based on that. So going through the test results, man, it says my diversity is low. Some bacteria and fungal levels are within normal and healthy range. So it kind of breaks it down to like the key takeaways, and it goes into a recommendations based on that. So that gives me dietary recommendations. So it's, the first one is to increase my plant intake. So, you know, I was probably have one to two cups of vegetables with my meals, right? But this is recommended that I increase it to like 9 cups daily. So, getting way more. Well, I mean, cups aren't that big if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a measurement of a cup, actually. Now, you know what I mean? So more leafy greens, fruits, vegetables, which I really don't eat fruits that much because you get an insulin response with fruit because of the sugar. But I mean, it's all give and take, right?
Mm-hmm.
More plant-based foods like beans, lentils, nuts, and whole grains, more fiber, stuff like that, antioxidants. Plants are rich in antioxidants, which is good to reduce inflammation. Because you know, when you work out, when you damage your body, and you have a shitty diet, you're getting oxidative stress, which is you have all these free radicals, and then the antioxidants come in and kind of repair those free radicals and mitigate them. That's why those are important. And increased probiotic fermented and cured foods. So like some like off the wall, like kimchi, fermented vegetables, and kombucha, kefir, and yogurt actually is really good for your gut, which I
can't do
that, but I never really, I just never really ate it that much. So
I've been drinking the kombucha lately.
Have you?
Yeah. Which is really rare for me. Cause I didn't even realize it was like basically like a vinegar. And you can see the you know, what are they called in though? The enzymes or the probiotic,
yeah.
I mean, floating in there, which is really gross to look at. And I just, you instantly want to shake it, which is because it's like just settled in the bottom and floating off. So I like got the first one and I'm shaking it. And Lucy's like, what are you doing? You idiot. You're supposed to eat it like that. And I look and it says, do not shake on the bottom. But it doesn't taste as bad. Like I despise vinegar, the taste and the smell, but it's not that bad. They got different flavors and stuff. And so I've had a few of those lately.
So those are some of the dietary recommendations. And then it goes into lifestyle recommendations. So even down to practice good eating habits, you know, setting the stage, mindful meals support healthy digestion. So like chewing your food for longer and just being mindful. Actually that plays a huge role in how you digest food. Like it's pretty weird, like the psychological part of it too, that impacts the gut. No, cause even as far as like people eating at their desk, they're eating way too fast, you know? And it's like, are you really digesting and getting all the nutrients out of that meal? You know? So that's kind of the other part of it. And that's something that I do. Cause I'll just like cook a meal and I'll just fucking stand on the counter and just fucking eat it real quick, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like I just gotta go do something else or whatever.
Yeah.
But being mindful of it it helps you with the digestion, which you can extract the nutrients easier. And consistent activity is a big part. 3 to 4 times a week, you know, exercise and that kind of thing. There's a higher correlation between regular exercise and a healthy gut, it says
here. Well, you exercise, right? So that's just like a generic recommendation. It's not for you.
Yeah, basically it says you reported, because you fill out a survey too. It says you reported 3 to 4 days, and it's basically just keep doing that. That's a great routine.
Gotcha.
Regular exercise reduces inflammation, you know, kind of things you already knew. Right, produces endorphins, happy hormones, and all that stuff, and improve your mood, which also helps with the gut and digestion and everything like that. So those are some of the lifestyle recommendations. Then it goes into supplement stuff, which is, you know, fish oils, omega-3 fatty acids are very anti-inflammatory and support balance in the gut. And you can add, they want me to add like prebiotic supplements and some greens and stuff like that. Some vitamin D. I already know what you're going to make.
I thought that's why you moved to Arizona, dude.
Yeah, get out of the sun. So, I mean, I just needed to add some more diversity to my diet is the problem. I
some really grains.
Don't have any inflammation issues. I feel like I don't, but maybe once I start doing some of these recommendations, I may improve.
You look swole to me.
Thanks, man. So, yeah, I'm going to try and do like a some form of a smoothie every day with the greens and some of the, like the kefir and all that stuff with some yogurt.
Reefer. You can get those greens, like the greens mix, you know what I mean? That you pour in powder. Right. That stuff is nasty.
Yeah. And then maybe throw some fruit in there to kind of, you know, sweeten it up and probably come up with a little Drew cocktail that I may just share with everybody once I get it dialed in, and then you can try it for yourself and see how it works. So I think I'm going to do this for like the next 3 months, like try implementing all these recommendations. And then I think I might just get another one just to see the difference, you know?
That's a good idea. You should call the smoothie Drew's Gut Impactor.
Yeah.
You know?
Get that hit. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see
you can move the needle.
Right. And because, I mean, I think everyone should look into this. I mean, I think the kit, it's not the cheapest thing. It's like $140, $130. But if you feel like shit all the time, you know, you're never going to know, you know, what you need to do unless you get a baseline, right? You need to know where you're currently at or understand your body, what's going on in your gut for you to improve it. And they give you like supplement recommendations and your diet recommendations and lifestyle recommendations. So
what's the, where'd you get it from, the website?
It's called Biome HM or Bio something. BioHM.com.
I'm going to have to try that, man, because my gut's a mess, bro.
Yeah, I think I was surprised that I was that low. I feel like I eat fairly healthy, but I just don't eat enough. Like variety, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's good to know. Now I can improve, you know? So
interesting. The key is, man, if you feel like shit, send your shit in. Let somebody tell you what's up with that shit.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah, it does take like 2 months, but hey.
That's because you sent in like 2 gallons of doo-doo, man.
They're like, dude, we gotta fucking have hazmat come in here and get rid of some of this shit.
You had to get a plow to come in and move through it.
So that's that.
All right.
That's the gut.
Little update on Drew's gut biome test that we talked about several episodes back. So I want to hit you guys with a little bit of motivation real quick. I'm not going to steal a ton of time from your already incredible Monday. But again, I heard a quote that's been sticking with me, man. And it's I wanted to pass it along. And I don't got a name on who said it because I don't remember. But wasn't me. I'm not trying to steal credit here, but it was something along the lines of, bad shit happens to winners all the time. what they said. So it's, you know, the difference between winners and losers. You hear that a lot, you know, and we've talked about it on here before, but, you know, you can feel like a loser sometimes, you know, when you fail at something. And then you can feel like a big winner when you're really successful at something. So when I heard this, bad shit happens to winners all the time. It's how they process it that's different, right? So we've talked about that on here before by taking every loss as a lesson, an opportunity to learn, and you're not taking enough L's probably, right? We did a really good episode on that. But, you know, this just made me think, man, like bad shit happens a lot. That's just life, right? But if you're letting that make you feel like a loser, I think you're missing the bigger picture. And I know a lot of people do feel like losers when bad shit happens. But you know, just to reassure yourself that you're not a loser because bad shit happens to you. You're only a loser when you accept that that bad shit is you, is a norm for you, right?
Right.
So, you know, thinking about, it made me think about, there's people out there that you think of just as winners, right? And kind of the default one everybody goes to is Michael Jordan, right? Nobody would call that dude a loser. He's a winner on the highest level. But, you know, when you drill down into his story, and I think everybody's familiar with his story, so many losses, right? He was a loser several times in his life, right? And the probably the most famous one was he got cut from his high school basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you know, people probably looked at him like he was a loser. He probably felt like a loser for a second, and that's okay. But he flipped that, processed it a little different, turned it into a fire, let it push him to become who he become, which is like the biggest winner of all time, right? So I just think it's cool to think when bad shit happens to you and it makes you feel like a loser and it's a big loss, to think about making that loss part of the story of an even bigger win, because nobody remembers that little loss that Michael Jordan had, right? But when you go through his story, it turns into this really funny, you know, like anecdotal piece of his story. Can you imagine? He actually got cut from his basketball team. Yeah. Well, when something bad happens to you and you're feeling like a loser, just process it as, okay, I'm going to make this loss a really, really funny part of my really, really big win. Right.
Yeah.
So when I do get on this level and I'm winning really high, I can point back and say, hey guys, I took this loss. Can you imagine me doing that? Like, look how killing it I am now, but I actually took a big loss. So keep the bigger picture in mind and always think when those losses come in, how you can process them, flip them, and make them a funny ass little story in the big grand scheme of things in your big, big wins. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, that should all be used as fuel, you know. As far as like even so how is the bar set on everything, right? The bar is typically set at a point of failure, right? That's what sets the bar. This is the failure. So you go to a certain point, you fail, and then that's where you're, okay, that's the bar. Maybe somebody had to, like, if you're trying to break a record, right? Like David Goggins. Did you finish that book, by the way?
No, I haven't started it.
I just finished it yesterday. Super, super great story. I mean, you kind of know a lot. He says a lot on his podcast interviews and stuff. But it took this dude. He broke the world record for pull-ups in 24 hours, right? And it took him 3 times to do it. So, you know, so it's like the failure point became the bar. So the guy before him, he just did it until he failed. Like he couldn't do any push or pull-ups anymore. And that became the bar. So the point of failure, whatever it is, becomes the bar. And then your goal, obviously, after that is to raise the bar, right? Everyone's always trying to raise the bar. But the bars are made from failures. So I think that's important that you realize that. And then it's just part of the process. Like taking the L's are part of the process to raise the bar. That's how it all happens. And somebody has to do it or there's never going to be a bar set at all, right? So I think it's important that you use those failures, not only for the experience, but as fuel to add to the story. Because it just makes it for a great story at the end of the day. When you do finally achieve the things you're trying to achieve, it's like, damn, you look back like, I tried this so many times and then I came up short here and there. But every time you do that, what's important is you get those key takeaways of why you failed or what can you do different next time to make things more efficient and be more effective in the process. You know, it's all you're doing it for the learning and the experience and using those as stepping stones to continue to raise the bar.
That's a good point about the bar. It's like it makes me think of the 4 minute mile. If you're not familiar with that story, like back in the day, and I don't know, this is like the 1940s or whatever, nobody could run a mile in 4 minutes. It was like, it's just impossible. People could get close, nobody could do it. And it was deemed as impossible because, I mean, there was even scientists that came out and would say, your body breaks down running that fast. Your body just can't, the human body cannot run that fast in the 1 mile sprint. It's not physically possible. I mean, they had scientific studies on it until some dude did it, right? He did it. And now the 4 minute mile is a joke. The record now is 3 minutes and 43 seconds. Yeah. And so many people have run more than 4 minutes, but it's because they needed somebody to change the bar.
That's it, right? Man.
Somebody said, the bar was here. Okay, now it's here. And then everybody's like, oh shit. Even though that one dude said my legs would fall off if I ran that fucking test.
And he's like, start a fire on my feet.
Yeah. And then you just do it because the bar was moved, which I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And you know, what really bugs me is I hate when people see winners and they act like nothing bad ever happens to them. Right? Like, like if a bunch of bad shit's happening to you, you're feeling like a loser. And then they look at a winner and they're like, well, they don't got it as bad as me. You know, they never have bad shit happen like I do. That is such nonsense. That's such a weak excuse.
Get the fuck out of here.
Winners every day. The same bad shit that happens to you happens to winners, dude. Their parents die, right? Their dog dies, right? they spill their coffee all over themselves in the morning. The same bad shit that happens to you happens to winners. They just process it totally differently and they turn it into an even bigger win. So you forget about it. And then you think that stuff can't happen to them because they're doing so much big shit, so many big wins that they don't have time to tell people about the bad stuff. You think there's no way they don't even have time to fail like I do. Right. So I can't stand that when people try to make that comparison. Like, well, you know, no, then their cat didn't get stuck in that tree like mine did.
Yeah, dude. People are quick to use other people's strengths as their weaknesses and excuses, like why they can't accomplish something, right? But for that person to gain those strengths, they had to go through a tremendous amount of weakness, conquering, and you know, overcoming the losses or whatever to achieve that. The biggest difference is the mindset, right? It's how they handle it. It's all bad shit happens to people every fucking day, no matter who you are. It's how you choose to handle it. And process it. That's the difference. It's all mindset.
Yeah, man. So I just wanted to share that with you freaks out there. If you're feeling like a loser, flip that shit around and don't try to use the excuse that winners don't have bad stuff happening to them, because bad shit happens to winners all the time. They just process it different. So join the club.
Welcome to the Winners Club.
You might as well have started talking about the next topic while I was talking about that topic. You know what I'm saying? Because that would have been a prime example of multitasking.
So, yeah, I was going to talk about multitasking. People think, I don't know, man. It's not possible to multitask. Physically possible, mentally possible. It's impossible to multitask. People think it's a great thing, and they brag about being able to multitask. But what you're actually doing is called task switching. So multitasking is not, it's mentally, you're not able to think about more than one thing at one time. That's why it's not a real thing. It sounds effective. It sounds great. It sounds like you can be way more productive, but studies prove that the opposite happens. You can be an effective task switcher, but you cannot multitask. And
multitasking is fake, dude. It's kind of like flat earth.
Exactly. It's not real. So here's what's happening when you think you're multitasking is you're actually task switching, and the chances are you're creating a lot of more downtime and you're not accomplishing what you could should you have stuck with that same task until completion or until a level of completion that you know, you can't move any further at this given time, right? Maybe you need to wait on somebody else. Maybe you're waiting on a quote or something from somebody else. That's when you can effectively task switch and go on to something else. So it's important that when you start doing something that you stick with it until you can no longer go any further on that given task. And then you can task switch, but you can't multitask, because if you start doing a little bit here and then something comes up, and just like email is a prime example, right? You start writing an email and then somebody else emails you, and then you're like, oh shit, now you got a draft over here. So it's taking you four times longer to complete that email that you started because you were trying to write this other email real quick.
And it's probably not going to be as good because you've lost focus. You know what I mean? You're out of the I know the feeling big time when you're really in the middle of something and you're firing away and you're in the zone, right? And you get away to something else and you come back, you can jump back in, but you can't just jump back into the zone like
you're in. So you're wasting a lot of time. You know, you're not being efficient at all. You think multitasking is efficiency, but it's total opposite, because you're creating, you know, all these barriers of reentry going back to that task, and, you know, switching the mindset of trying to focus on what you're trying to do. And then there's studies on this, like it's like a 40% reduction in productivity when you try to multitask throughout the day. If you were to come into it with a task, you know, that's why it's important that you schedule things out, like in your calendar or whatever, or you have these goals that you're trying to achieve on a smaller scale day to day, even like to the hour. You know, what are you going to do the first hour of work? And then you stick to that task until you can no longer go any further. You know, like you go as far as you can for what is required of you and all the information that you have given at that time. And then once you reach that point, then you go to the next task. Then your task switching, not, you know, multitasking. So think about that.
40% reduction in productivity. I can't afford that.
No one can. You think about it, right? That's why. And then these are the people that think they're multitasking all day, and then they fucking work 12, 14 hours, and they're never caught up. You know, they just, and then they become, I'm putting all this time in. I'm like, okay, well, that's your fucking fault, probably. I mean, people are busy, granted, right? But I think a lot of that can be eliminated if they just focus on one thing at a time until completion, and then switch to the next thing. Obviously most people's jobs have multiple things required of them per day, which is totally fine. You can be an effective task switcher, but you cannot multitask. So do everything that you can on that given task to completion before you switch to the next thing as much as possible. And then your productivity will go through the roof. Then that 12-hour day will turn into an actual 8-hour day, you know?
Yeah, dude, that's really funny. Everybody has, I mean, I know we all have those days where you're like, man, I was all over the place. I was killing it. You know, I was being pulled in 50 different directions. There was 80 people at my door. I was killing it all day. I solved all these problems. But then you're like, well, I was also there till 6 o'clock. And then what did you actually accomplish? What'd you get done? You know, nothing, but I put out a bunch of fires. I didn't really get anything done though.
Even your fires to put out? You know, you got to ask yourself that too. Like, not everything's your problem just because it comes to you running, you know. You gotta be able to analyze it and say, okay, great. Let me finish what the fuck I'm doing right now. And then so obviously some things take priority, but you just gotta know to read how important tasks are at any given time, but prioritize. But I would imagine everyone can reduce their stress levels and accomplish way more if they were to task switch more effectively instead of trying to do this thing that cannot be done, which is multitasking, because your brain does not have the capacity to think of multiple things and do multiple things at any given time.
Drew Kyrie Irving Castle over here, man, just shaking everything up on you, telling you the earth is flat and multitasking ain't even real.
Yeah. Well, check your ankles. Even if you're sitting down, you might have some weak ankles right now.
Get broke off, dude. All right, man. Well, I think that wraps it up for episode number 38. Appreciate everybody for joining us. A lot going on right now. Look out for next week is the grand finale of the 100-Day 5K Challenge. So stay tuned for some updates and how many people actually made it to the finish line. And then some shout outs for all the awesome people who even gave it a try. It has been interesting. So we'll give you an update on that next week. And then, you know, obviously check us out on Friday for the Friday 15. Hit us up for wristbands. We got a ton of those left. And like, subscribe, comment, all that fun stuff. And just to recap this episode, Drew hit you with the gut biome update. I call it the butt biome because you can access the gut through the butt, and he hit you with an update. Stay tuned on for his shake that he's going to tell you all about how to drink. It's called the Drew's Gut Impactor, patent pending. Trademark. And then I talked about winners and losers, man. Bad shit happens to winners all the time. They just process it differently. So be a winner. And then Drew told you that multitasking ain't even real. You're faking the funk. And that's it for this episode. So stay tuned for next time. I hope you enjoyed the show. And until you hear from me again, please grow your brain a little bit.
That's it. Stay productive and get shit done.